Hello and welcome, everyone. I have with me a special guest today, Peter. And I met Peter a few weeks ago through my research when I interview him because of the break that pattern was kind of like leading into how leaders feels, what they experience in their leadership roles, and what is the predominant mood that is really driving today's environment. And I love the conversation. We actually talked a little bit more than 20 minutes. I think we went like for 1 hour and a half or something. We really have great conversation about leadership. And I thought this will be something very valuable for you guys to really just learn from someone else. Don't listen to me all the time. I don't need to be here alone and hear some opinions, some experience, and some challenges and wins during the leadership journey that Peter's experience. And yeah, I would love to welcome you here. Thank you so much for joining me. And yeah, how are you today?
Thank you for having me on. Yeah, I'm doing great. I mean, it's a beautiful sunny day. It's hard to be anything but in a good mood.
Absolutely. Yeah, we always have sunny days. And even if it's not sun, it's always warm. That is perfect. Yeah. Look, I would love to kind of give you a little bit of space to tell us something about you, like who you are, why
Yeah.
leadership, why all those amazing things that you achieve.
Well, I've been in the working world for longer than I care to re remember, but probably over 30 years. And the entire time, I would say I've been a very conscious leader and somebody who's been very focused on purpose and having that clear purpose and value set drive some of the decisions that I make. So, there are people who go through life looking for, the next job that pays them more or whatever. And obviously there's other considerations that are built in those sorts of decisions. But I've always made, I think, my decisions on the basis of, did it feel right for me? Could I make an impact? Did it align with my values? And did it align with my personal purpose? And my personal purpose is to create confidence and community for those seeking to address the world's social and environmental challenges. And, those are legion. That's a pretty broad purpose, obviously, social and environmental challenges, but it has allowed me to create some focus to what I do. And that notion of building community and confidence is hand in hand because you can't, I don't think, have that confidence if you feel you're a lone wolf or you're trying to forge new ground, and there's nobody that cares about you or what you're trying to do. And that notion of community, I think, is really important to a leader as well, because you need to find like-minded people that you can oftentimes bounce ideas off of or feel that you can talk to as a trusted advisor or a mentor or whatever a label you want to put on it. So I have spent my career really dealing with a variety of issues, mostly in that social and environmental domain, but at the intersection of that and communications and marketing and business. And when I did my MBA in 30 years ago, actually, I specialized in environmental management at the time, and it was a pretty new program. These days, there are MBAs that have specializations in sustainability and so on, but this didn't exist 30 years ago. And I remember people, my classmates saying, "Well, that's a career limiting move, doing an MBA with a specialization in environmental management." And I said, "There is no way that business is going to be successful if it doesn't reflect some of the broader values of society." And already in the late 80s, if people remember, there was something called the Brundtland Report, and the notion of sustainable development started to happen. There was a big conference in Rio de Janeiro, and this started to emerge as a business issue because business operates within the limits of the planet, both environmental and social. And in many cases has a role to play in helping to feed society and operating in alignment with public consent to operate. So these were issues that were really important to me. And that's always how I've found opportunity. I've worked as a consultant. I've worked in C-suites. I've worked at a major retailer in Canada that specialized in outdoor retail. I was in the C-suite of a major corporation in British Columbia that operates the lotteries and casinos of British Columbia and remits the money back to the government, the profit, which is $1.5 billion Australian slash Canadian each year, used on arts and culture and healthcare and education. So anyway, you know, I've had a diversity of experience. I've lived in India, I've lived in North America, I've lived in Europe. So every experience though has always been guided by those values and that desire to make a contribution.
Yeah. I love it. I had when you talk, I had like a million questions because it's like everything in your kind of, you know, resume, like when you think about the experience and variety of things that you have done and traveled and experienced, there's so much. And I truly believe when we travel and meet different cultures and actually stay in environment, I'm not talking about traveling, going for holidays. I'm talking about traveling, staying and living in country. We learn so much because it's always so different. And we learn about ourselves and others. And I would love to probably ask and go back a little bit when you start to talk about environment, you know, and the social environment as well. And you mentioned something that, you know, like people or there are challenges and people have difficulties when there is no confidence, you know, it's really hard to stay connected. Like, I just love when you said that actually you're focusing on the building up that confidence, because I truly know a lot of people, they sit down at home and they want to go out there. They want to meet people. They want to be part of community. They want to do something better, but that fear, something is holding them back. And more you stay isolated, more and more actually you are disconnecting and you're further and further and it's harder to get back. Is that something that you're trying to help people as well, like solve that issue?
Well, if you think of like, what are the qualities of a good leader, right? I've seen a lot of bad leadership as well. And, you know, I think some leaders think that the way to be a good leader is you have all the answers, you're very directive, you want X, Y, or Z, right? And that, coming back to your earlier comments, I think that breeds some of the fear and insecurity that people have. And I always use as a lens, well, how would I want to be treated? And how would I want to be, you know, how would I want to interact with somebody else? And if it's a very finger waggy draconian kind of mindset, well, that is not the way that I want to focus. So I think a good leader, you know, brings their whole self to a situation. They imagine what it might be like to conduct themselves. And, you know, if you're dealing with, for example, somebody who's a woman of color in the workplace, well, you know, I'm a white guy, and I can't be, I have to the greatest degree possible, think about, well, how am I coming across to this person? And can I maybe be, you know, more schooled and use more cross-cultural communication skills and so on, or not? Because if I don't modify the way that I interact with people based on who they might be, their role in the company, let's say, or their cultural background, if you don't do that, then I don't think you're an effective leader, because it's not a one-size-fits-all kind of reality. So, you know, I think some of the qualities that leaders of today need to foster is that kind of servant leadership mindset. Like, yes, sometimes you need to lead from the front, and you need, you know, as I always say, you need to create clear goals and outcomes. You need to get the right resources for your team to achieve what they need to do. You need to do your utmost to remove the barriers and then get the hell out of the way. You know, as a leader, your role is not to micromanage and second guess and so on. It's to coach and mentor and make sure that they have what they need. And sometimes, especially now, like if we, you know, think back on COVID, we didn't have all the answers to what was happening. We didn't know how the business might pivot or how long this was going to last, or, you know, we had to come up with new policies and so on and so on. And so, you know, you have to revel in that ambiguity, and you have to sometimes say, I don't know the answer, but let's figure this out, right? And so sometimes you lead from the front, and sometimes you have to lead from behind and just support your people to bring out the best in them and to deal with the situation and find the answer for themselves, to coach them, to mentor them. So I think it's a bit of both. But the old school mindset of a leader was, I'm at the front of the pack. I have to have all the answers. I have to be bold and decisive. And if I'm not, then I'm being weak. Mm-hmm. And I'm not being a good leader. But that's not what a good leader does or how a good leader behaves, I don't think. Yeah. It really is. You're trying to bring out the best in your people, and you're trying to support them to grow and develop over time. And that's what you should be focused on, with clear goals.
Yeah.
And making sure they have the resources that they need, and to remove barriers where you can in order for them to achieve those outcomes.
I hope a lot of leaders already understand this, because it truly, it is not about being the smartest and best, you know, on the top. And it's very interesting that so many people or so many leaders don't even know that that behavior is actually disempowering for the team. That means it's actually making their team weaker, because, you know, they are the best. That means they create a little bit of underlying competition. And yeah, it's a very interesting way of leading. And I know that was quite normal, but I would say maybe 50 years ago, 30 years ago. And we have a lot of people, and talk about, you know, communication. That's a very interesting point, because I saw a lot of people, especially when you have the older leaders, they use a lot of sarcasm. And, you know, sarcasm around friends is awesome. Like, we have fun, you know, we do it to each other. But I think they didn't realize how dangerous it can be in a work environment, how unhealthy that is, and actually how not smart type of humor that is. You know, I was shocked when I experienced that type of humor when I came first time in the company. And I spoke with this person, and I felt weird. Like, I didn't know, you know, what to say, how to react, if that is serious. Because if you don't know the person, you're not sure if that is a joke. You know, like, it was really, for me, as a person in the team, or someone that needs to collaborate with that kind of leader, it's almost like, wow, like, we need to fix this, because the communication between the team and yourself is probably very similar to what I'm experiencing here. I feel, I don't know what you want from me, or if you're funny, or if you're friendly, or like, it's really hard to put in a box or understanding. That means adjusting communication, I think, is so important. That what you mentioned is so important in leadership.
Yeah, I would say in the workplace, like, sarcasm or sarcastic humor is probably an indication of an environment that's not functioning optimally. I mean, we all, as you said, like, we all use sarcasm and so on. But if that becomes the default to the way that people conduct themselves in the workplace, that oftentimes sarcasm is the defensive mechanism.
Yeah.
And sarcasm also, many times, it diminishes other people.
Absolutely. Right?
That's where the sarcasm part comes in. And if you diminish other people, as particularly, again, as a leader, well, that's not what your role is as a leader, right? And so we talked about the old way of being a leader and the new way of being a leader. And I think, you know, as I said, not having all of the answers, working with your team and bringing the best out of them is really important. But so is also being vulnerable. And I think, you know, we oftentimes look at that notion of vulnerability as a weakness. And we say, oh, well, you want to be vulnerable because, you know, if we think of vulnerability, we might think of, like, animals in the wild, and a vulnerable animal gets, you know, is the weakest one and gets eaten or whatever. But actually, vulnerability can be glass half full, not just glass half empty. And it can be a sign that you're open, that you're aware, that you want to learn, and so on. And I think, you know, a good leader is also has that self-awareness of how they show up and is willing to take comments or sometimes criticism, hopefully constructive, hopefully radical candor from some of the from their staff, and say, hey, how am I showing up? And, oh, I didn't realize that that behavior or that way of being was having that impact. And I'm glad that you've pointed it out. many times people respond very defensively to those things and they dig in their heels. And we see that in politics. We see that in, you know, the way that people like Donald Trump behave. You know, he goes on the attack every time, as opposed to some self-reflection. And I think that's a really important function. And I'm a big believer in Stoic philosophy. And one of the things that Stoicism talks about is every day you should be doing some self-reflection about how your day went. You know, how did you show up? What could you have done better? What did you do well? And what could you have done better? And not from a standpoint, I think there's a leadership lesson in this. It's also not from a standpoint of beating yourself up or saying, oh, I'm not worthy or I'm stupid or whatever. But it's just like, you know, I've given another thought to the way that I interacted with that person or that team or whatever. And if I could do this all over again, or the next time that I do this, I might shift it a little bit, or I might handle it slightly differently. But you don't get there unless you have a little bit of self-reflection, right? Yeah. So I like to swim. I'm a swimmer and I go to the pool and I swim a couple of kilometers every time I go. And I just swam this morning and I use that. Takes me, you know, 50 minutes or so. And I use that as meditative time. Like I think about stuff because, you know, short of counting laps, you don't have a lot to do in the pool. And so I think about things that have happened and how I want to show up and how I could handle that situation. And whether it's in the pool or whether it's, you know, in your backyard or lying in bed in the morning or whatever, I think it's really important to do that as a leader. Yeah. to think through that stuff, because we learn a lot from that. Of course, you know, there's reading and there's watching different videos and other things that can help contribute, but we're all different. And so our self-reflection is a really important function, I think, in furthering your leadership style.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Absolutely. Self-effectiveness or self-agency and understanding, you know, like who we are, where we are and how we act. I think that's really great. And I believe it's, as you said, you know, it's so important doing that every day and understanding what we do and what we have done. But there is a thing that you mentioned, and I think that's very important, because you mentioned beating yourself up, you know, and having those negative thoughts. Because what happened, I think a lot of people are kind of scared to reflect, because we always done something that can be better tomorrow. And we know that even, you know, this interview can be better tomorrow. It can be better, you know, next week. There is always something that can be better. And I think some people can't handle. And I believe there is that part that you say, you know, don't beat up yourself for that. Because yes, of course, we say things that we want to take back, but we can only say, you know what, next time I will be better. And I love that mindset, because it's so important to improve daily.
Yeah. Yeah. So that self-reflection is important, but I think, and I think a complementary kind of mindset to that is optimism. Now, you know, I think that has to be combined with realism, right? Like realistically, there are some challenges to the future of the planet. And if we think about climate change, and I've worked on that issue for many years as well, we're not in a good state. We're just not. And anybody who thinks we're not is in denial. However, there's two ways that you can approach this, right? You can be fatalistic and you can say, well, there's no hope and we're all doomed, which is a self-fulfilling prophecy. Or you can have some optimism and some hope, and you can say, well, I'm going to do some things that are going to maybe move the agenda forward. So whether it's climate change or any issue, I think as a leader, your people want you, they're not even looking necessarily for you to have all the answers, but they do want that sense of optimism and that sense of hope. And let's work together to find the right solution, or let's work together to achieve a particular goal. And you have to, I think, as a leader, bring that optimism to the table. And even if you're quietly panicking or you don't for 100%, you know, have it all worked out, you need to bring that sense to the table. Because if you're defeatist and if you have a really negative attitude, people will respond to that and they'll just go shrug their shoulders and they'll say, oh, well, we're screwed. Yeah. Or we'll never achieve that goal. And so that's a really important thing too. And I think many times, and it's not just what you say, I think it's the way that you show up. And I think a lot of leaders don't realize how much people watch their behavior.
Absolutely.
Right. And so, you know, even if you don't think people are watching, they're watching. And so if you're cynical, like you said, or sarcastic, if you don't follow through on your commitments, if you are negative, people see that all the time. And then they take their cues from that. And you have an important role to play. You're setting the tone for the culture of the organization. And it starts at the top. Yes, you want to foster. It's not only about the top, obviously. It's about all layers of the organization. But if people at the top are, you know, Machiavellian, if they're backstabbing, if they don't get back to people, if they're sarcastic, if they're if they don't model some of the behaviors that I've talked about that I think are appropriate behaviors, then that just trickles down. And that it doesn't matter what your values are written on a wall. It's what gets you need to make sure that the behaviors are congruent with the values that you say you have as an organization, whether that's integrity and honesty or teamwork or any one of those, you know, words that organizations use.
Oh, there is so much wisdom you just said. And there was a lot of things. And when you mentioned climate change, I was straight away thinking that this is it's almost a funny topic now, because it become very strange. You know, people keep buying Tesla cars, so they think they saving environment. But it's, you know, everyday action is so important that we will be, or we will start to be more conscious. To me, it's the conscious decision every day. What am I buying? What am I actually doing? How I'm consuming my food? How am I talking to people? How much I'm driving? I think it's all just that real conscious life, conscious living, and understanding how I can be better so my environment is better. And I know people think that, you know, like I'm just this small, you know, one person. But as you said, we're going to leadership now. People are watching you. And people are watching you. Yeah. If you actually walking on the street and take the rubbish from the path, put it in the rubbish bin, people are watching you. And next time they do it because they think, oh my God, that was so nice. You know, it was actually really inspiring. That means every action you do, you don't know who is watching you, and you don't know whose behavior will be changed by that. And I love when you mentioned that, because in leadership is so important. Like that's, you know, another level, because you're influencing so much more, so many more people. And it's such a, like such a great topic when we think about pessimism and optimism. And I love that you mentioned that, because I was imagining the leader coming into team, you know, when COVID happened or when any crisis happened, they will be just sitting there and saying like, oh, this is the end of the world. You know, the company is going to crash. We will need to fire people. Like if we will talk this way, you know, and just seeing the dark part instead of focusing on solution with the team, and bringing that little bit of optimism that we are going to have broken people, we are going to destroy their life without even knowing that actually our mood is totally changing how they feel, how they behave, what they're going to do next. And oh, that's such an important topic. It's so important, the mood, I guess, the mood and emotions, because you mentioned already a little bit of emotional intelligence, basically, when you talk about people, how they interact, you know, how they behave, how they, I guess, self-regulate. And
interestingly enough, if you look at some of the most you know, famous names and like leaders, if you look at somebody like an Elon Musk or Jack Welch at General Electric or whatever, some of these people, they actually, if you look at behavioral, like psychotic behaviors and different behavioral disorders, many of the big leaders actually have some of those disorders. And the reason why they've gotten to the top is because of that disordered behavior. And they've, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like they've stepped on other people to get to the top. But, you know, I don't think that's sustainable. And certainly, it doesn't create a great environment in an organization. And I don't think it's the only pathway to being a good leader, right? Oh, it's sad. And something that it's very sad, and it has destroyed people. Like, you know, tactics like firing people via text or having them show up and their pass doesn't work. Like, who makes these decisions from my perspective? Like, that is so terrible and so cowardly from my perspective that you shouldn't be making those kinds of decisions, right? And I think another key principle for a good leader is thinking about how do I create a sense of belonging, right? Mm-hmm. And I talked about, you know, my purpose around this confidence and community. And that notion of belonging both feeds community and feeds the notion of confidence. Because, you know, a lot of companies talk about their diversity and inclusion policies, right? But it's like, so what? So you've got X percentage of this group or that group in the organization. That doesn't mean that people still feel that they can belong at that place or that they bring their whole self. The ultimate test is to ask your people in an engagement survey or whatever means you know, in an anonymized way, do you feel like you belong here? That's the litmus test. And if people say they don't feel like they belong, then you need to dig into that a bit further with some more questions and identify the root causes for why. Because if your people feel that they belong in the organization, then you're going to have them deliver great results.
Yeah.
It's a key litmus test that you need to ask yourself. Do people feel that? And diversity and inclusion is a means to an end. And it's not the sum total of creating a feeling of belonging. It's part of it because you need diversity of people, and organizations that are more diverse make better decisions and have more perspectives and generally respond better to the world around them. Because guess what? The world is diverse. And so if you have a bunch of, let's say, white middle-aged guys that are all at the top and they're making all the decisions, guess what? They're applying a white middle-aged lens, male lens, to all their decisions. And they're not reflecting maybe who their customers are or who their employees are or whatever. And so that notion of, do you feel like you belong, is critical.
Yeah.
And that's a job of a leader.
It is absolutely belonging. And now they call it psychological safety, right? Like feeling like you belong, you're heard and seen and understood and all those things. I don't like when governments start to package that into something that you have to have. And I think that's what happened with the diversity, because they said you have to have this, you know, percentage. Someone decided somewhere that we need to measure that. And I think that's so wrong, because I believe all recruiting system and all hiring system, it should be totally changed. That shouldn't be even asking you in, you know, on Seek when you're going to look for jobs. The first question is, you're white or you are indigenous, you know, like, I'm so sorry, but why? Why that question? Who cares, right? Like, we should start to care what skills you have, what do you want to bring, what is your passion. I think we're forgetting about the human qualities, attitudes. We don't ask people about their attitudes. We don't ask them about how they approach last job, how they approach, you know, the situation. I think that will teach you more about the person than just tick the box and totally say, like, you know what, you're female, now we don't need you because we need to fulfill, you know, the other position and we need to have men or opposite, right? It doesn't make sense. I think it's so unfair and creates actually not belonging and creates the culture of unfairness. And I would like to hear your opinion about that, because to me, you know, when you hire men, for example, for the position where naturally is better female, right? Like, I don't know, for like kindergarten or somewhere, right? And just because you need to fulfill a quota, you will just, you know, say that we need now 20 men. How the man will feel in that role? Because, you know, they will already create this connection between two people, because women will be pointing out the finger, oh, we just needed to fulfill quota. The man will feel like he's not valued, he's not belonging. It will, I think it creates more bad culture than good culture.
Well, my easy answer is it's complicated.
Yes.
Some of this has been a response to the fact that people or companies or organizations have not reflected the diversity around them, right? So one way of dealing with that was to create a quota or they call it affirmative action in some places, and in the United States, for example. So, you know, one effective, and for example, tests have been done. So if my name is, I don't know, Muhammad, and I apply for a job, in many cases, I get disqualified because somebody thinks that I might be a radical Muslim. And the reality is, if you and if that person applies for the same credentials for a job and has the name of John Smith,
yes, it's
they
yeah.
might be they might be considered. One solution to this is to have a system where you de-identify the candidate's gender and just take their name out of it.
Exactly.
For example, and just look at them as a person. Now, that said, there are cases, where you need to create opportunities for people to further themselves because, you know, for example, some people say, well, poor people just need to work harder. They're lazy. And it's like, well, no, they're not lazy. They've had circumstances, in some cases, barriers that have been put in front of them because of their gender or background or whatever. It's not that easy. So that's why I'm saying to you, I hear what you're saying around some of these, you know, issues of creating a quota and then thinking, you know, that it's done and some of the challenges that are associated with that. For the same token, I think some of these have been brought in to create opportunities where they might not have existed. And so, you know, what's the solution? There isn't a silver bullet to this. I think we have to continue to play a bit with the dials. But I do think that one issue of de-identifying people when they apply for a role and just looking at their credentials, as opposed to what gender or color or whatever they are, is one way of doing this, but also being conscious as an organization that you probably have a role to play in society to create opportunities.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah,
for those absolutely. Who need to develop further and who haven't been given opportunities because of their socioeconomic background. So it's probably a combination of things. Obviously, there's no, as I said, silver bullet, but I don't think a quota system is the sum total of an answer either.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Yeah. Like I absolutely agree. We need to give people opportunities, but I think from the moment when we ask questions about gender and ethnicity, we are creating actually diversity ourselves. Sorry. We are creating not inclusion. Basically we are excluding people because we have biases, right? We decided to hire people on one gender. That means we will just check that. And I was really great. Probably my experience. I had really great experience with that. Because of my visa level was not exactly how it was, but I was fully able to work when I came to Australia. I had proper visa, but I just didn't have my permanent residency yet. But nobody even cared to listen to my story that I want to stay and I have plans and I want to, you know, build up my career. They, in the first few boxes, when you tick the box that you don't have citizenship yet, you are excluded straight away. And I didn't know about that. I was sending 1,024 CVs all year, right? I just tried to get into interview. Peter, I didn't get into one interview. And I have university, I have master's degrees. I didn't get into one interview because of my name. My surname was Holzbarova. Navisteri is so much easier. And because everybody thought that maybe I don't speak English or they just exclude me because I ticked the wrong box, right? That is to me, that creates actually not equal opportunities when you think about it. That means when we actually tick the boxes already, exclude us because of ethnicity or gender or because we don't have a citizenship yet, right? It's that we are not listening. To me, that's biases, you know, and not listening people, they are really applying for the jobs. That's why I believe, yeah, I agree, we need to create opportunities and I love to employ different people. I have different people from different countries as well in my company. And I love that, but that's when the leader needs to be probably listening, more open. I don't know, what do you think are qualities that, you know, you don't need quotas and tick the boxes, that you need to become the person that really creates that environment? What do you think there are qualities that we need to start to learn, develop, or skills?
Well, I think, you know, sometimes, or oftentimes I would say, a leader picks people that look like them. And I think you have to, as a leader, get comfortable with picking people who don't necessarily come from you from the same background, right? So I 100% think that you need to be, and this comes back to this idea of vulnerability and so on as well, but you need to be comfortable with giving a chance to somebody who maybe brings a different mindset or a different approach. I think a good leader does that and creates the environment where those people can be successful. And you have to be aware of cross-cultural differences, right? So for example, if I come from a culture that's very hierarchical, let's say if I come from India, where they're, even though it's theoretically outlawed, and I've lived in India for 5 years, so I think I know a thing or two about the environment. People from different castes, those from a higher caste will behave differently from those from a lower caste, even in a meeting setting, for example, because the higher caste person gets to say more or is viewed as being more in the group dynamic of as having more value. And I think a leader needs to be aware of some of these things, or know that, hey, if I'm a female from a Muslim country, I might not be comfortable with putting up my hand and speaking out. I need a different avenue to give my input. Maybe it's more anonymous, or maybe it's some other means where I feel that I can say what I need to say or make the contribution that I want to make, but I don't feel comfortable putting up my hand at a meeting. And even if you go around the table and you say, do I have anything? Does anybody want to contribute or say anything? That just might not be culturally where I come from. So you need to be aware of those things as a leader and not just apply your own lens and your own experience. I think that's really critical to addressing some of the issues that you've talked about. And I don't think emphasize that enough in leadership training today, around that cross-cultural communications piece. And, you know, we're in Australia today. I come from Canada. There's many other countries, even in European countries, there's much more multiculturalism in the world. Needs to understand that there are different mindsets and different approaches. And your job is to create an environment where everybody can, where you can bring out the best in everybody, and that everybody can make a contribution. You have multiple avenues to get the input that you need, or for people to say what's on their mind. It's not just going to be speaking up at a meeting, because not everybody's going to feel comfortable with that.
Yeah. And I think also I love what you said, because it's basically accommodating, you know, the type or recognizing the different type of behaviors and attitudes and culture backgrounds, and really start to adjust the way how we run the business. And I love that, because I think, yes, you can also help people to speak up at a meeting, but it takes time. And if someone needs that time to actually grow and learn to be actually able to speak in front of a group, because I think that's a really important skill for someone, for example, the female you mentioned, right? Like, we want her to be able to one day maybe take over, you know, to general manager or C-suite position. That's what should be the goal of every leader, to help people actually to grow and become the best in their own skin, or the best way they can be. And yeah, I love that. And I think it's so important. And I love that we talk about, you know, cultural differences. We talk about communication. We talk about biases. We talk about a lot about diversity, you know, inclusion, and feeling like you belong and safe. And I think there's so much more we can go into, because it's so much more in leadership and approach. And yeah, like, I think we cover so much. I wish I can just squeeze it into, probably I'll just squeeze it into like a small blurb about all topics, because we can go deeper in at each topic and we can just talk about it hours and hours. Then it's probably, I will invite you for another session and we can just dive deeper into, you know, communication, cultural differences, especially with your experience, you know, living in different countries. And yeah, I would love that. If you will be okay with that, I will definitely do that for the next time. And before we end, or before we finish, I would love to ask, as I always ask people, first of all, what do you think where the leadership is heading, like the future, or, you know, the best way to lead people? What is required, or how do you see that in general?
Well, I think it's some of the themes that we've covered already, but I think, you know, there's a few things. We live in very uncertain times, and of course, everybody, all eras of humanity or civilization have thought that the world is ending and, you know, that there's crises befalling them. And there were different crises over time, whether it was wars or pestilence or disease or whatever the case may be. But I think, you know, as a leader, you really need to continue to show that optimism and that where you're helping to take your people forward into whatever future exists in your business or your industry or whatever, number one, that you understand that your role really is to create the best environment possible for your people. And that does not mean having all the answers and being finger waggy and draconian the way that you manage them, by being humble, by listening actively where they're at and finding out what they think, by not being defensive. I think these are important functions. And that embracing of diversity, and when I say diversity, I don't mean as a checkbox for your, you know, diversity strategy, but I mean really understanding that the world is diverse, that people are diverse, that that strength comes from that diversity, and that you as a leader shouldn't just be populating or surrounding yourself with other people that look like you. The best thing you can do is to bring different perspectives and attitudes into the organization, and you will make better decisions. It's sometimes threatening, or perceived as potentially threatening, because, oh gosh, you know, these people might bring a mindset or a set of values that I don't like or whatever. It's like, it's better to have that close to you and informing what you're doing than to be caught off guard or to not be aware of the zeitgeist that's going on. So, you know, I think we're going to see that uncertainty even continue further. We see in the younger generation this notion of, you know, everybody, you know, there's high anxiety. COVID has changed, I think, the way that people also value work and their workplace. All of these things are things that as a leader, you need to be mindful of. Environment where all those things are recognized and that you are leading people forward with those actively being addressed and considered, because if you have a mindset that was 20 years old where you know, the world was very different than it is today, that is not going to serve you going forward.
Yeah, and I love that. I think that belonging that we mentioned at the beginning, you know, when we talk about creating environment of belonging, is so important when you work with teams, you know, and they're working from home or from different countries. Remote teams, you know, it feels even more disconnected. And I think that mindfulness that you mentioned is so important. I agree on that. Like, people don't know how to handle remote teams, how to involve them. And I heard so many stories. I'm not going to even share them because it's crazy how with action of leadership or leaders action, they disconnecting and totally, I don't even know the word for that, excluding basically people because they work from different country or even different state when we are in Australia, right? It's just that. And yeah, I heard so many things that happens daily in organizations, and it's scary. But what I would love to probably ask you at the end, is there any advice you got that took you, you know, on the journey and took you here, living your fulfilled, happy life, or any advice that you'd like to share with people?
You know, I have a really good friend who I love her kids. And when I say her kids are adults now, they're in their 30s and 40s. But I loved her kids. And I asked her once, you know, if you could be a parent all over again, would you do anything differently? And because I said, you've done a really good job. And she said, I do one thing. And this has always stuck with me. And it's something that I carry forward with me. And I think is a really important leadership quality, to be more curious.
Oh, I love that.
Just to be more curious. And so You know, many times, and if you think about as a leader, you oftentimes feel you have to have the answer and you feel you need to give the direction. But if you ask a lot of questions and if you're open to different mindsets and so on, I think that really is a quality or a piece of, for what it's worth, a piece of advice that will serve people well. And rather than just coming in with all guns blazing and thinking that you have to have everything worked out, asking a bunch of questions, you know, is a really effective way to get to draw out of people where they're at. And I always talk about speaking into the listening, right? And so you can only speak into the listening when you understand the mindset that people are bringing, or the environment or the climate that people perceive. And you may perceive it one way, but don't make them wrong, because their feelings are their feelings, you know? And you telling them that their feelings are wrong, or that, I am a good leader. Well, no, they don't think you are, right? So I think that notion of curiosity is so important. And that's something that I've tried to bring into my leadership style, is always asking a lot of questions and not thinking that I have to, you know, just listen to the sound of my own voice. So for what that's worth, I think I would leave that as a piece of advice on the table for people to sample. Yeah.
That's beautiful. And I love that, because it is definitely wisdom. And when you actually apply it into your everyday life, in parenting, you know, with your friends, with a team, like you definitely learn actually so much more about life and about people. That means, I absolutely stay curious, because that's how kids learn, right? Like, they're curious, they're discovering, and they want to know everything. And I think that's what we forget so many times. Yeah, I love it. It just took me to back to childhood. Thank you so much, Peter. And last piece, where people can connect with you if they want to find you. Where is the best way?
Well, they can find me on LinkedIn. I don't know if you can put that also in the show notes, or
I will. Yeah,
put absolutely. My name on the podcast. But then people could just search for me and find me on LinkedIn. I'm quite active there.
Yeah, because we lost you for a second. That means they probably didn't understand your name. But what I'll do, I will share the link from the LinkedIn, from your profile and your name. Everything in description. That means, guys, if you want to connect with Peter, please just go to description, check what is there. There will be his link and his contact detail, so you can connect with him and have a chat like I had today. Thank you so much, and
marvelous.
Beautiful day, Peter.
Thank you so much.
Thanks.